Hi, everyone. I'm Rafael Tamayo, manager of the Oak Cliff Cultural Center, and you are listening to OC3 Frequencies, a podcast by the Oak Cliff Cultural Center. We are a division of the City of Dallas Office of Arts and Culture, and I am here with our team.
Iris Bechtel, Cultural Programs Coordinator.
Hey, Andrea Tostin, Cultural Programs Coordinator.
And as always, we have special guests with us on this episode that we are eager to talk with. So I will hand it off to our gallery coordinator and curator, Iris, to get us underway.
Thank you, Rafa. Today, we have the wonderful opportunity to speak with two amazing artists who are here living and working in Dallas in the DFW area. And they are here because there's an exhibition opening this Saturday, February 24th. And that exhibition is Learning to Be Tough by artist Tierra Unique Francois. And that's curated by artist and curator Sierra L. Bryant. I would love to give you some background on them so you don't have to immediately run to your computer and look them up, but do so later because they both have a lot of accolades to their names. Artist Tierra Unique Francois is born and based in Dallas, Texas. She earned her BFA in painting at the University of Texas at Arlington. Her work has been featured in group exhibitions in Texas, Georgia, and California. In 2021, she debuted her first solo exhibition, The Pro Compositions, at 500 Next Gallery in Dallas, Texas. And in 2022, she attended the On View residency in Savannah, Georgia. Sierra L. Bryant, who is our curator for this exhibition, is a multidisciplinary artist and curator working and residing in Dallas, Texas. Bryant's approach to research and curatorial practice has been integral to her process of furthering conversations surrounding Black culture and art, as well as historical studies. And y'all, recall I said she's a multidisciplinary artist. So in this space, she's been a curator, but she is also an artist with a lot of accolades, including having her work shown in the Nasher Window series, having shown at the MAC, among other really, really great spaces. She showed at South by Southwest a few years ago. She's amazing. So welcome, y'all.
Thank you.
We're so happy to have you.
Happy to be here.
Yes. Oh, and cool. So since we had a little hoop and holler earlier about it, I just want to shout out again. Congratulations to both of you, artist and curator, on being listed in the top five for this week on Glass Tire.
Thank you.
You did it.
Yay. And if you all listening don't know about Glass Tire, just Google it. It's an online arts portal to all things happening Texas, you know, so Houston, Austin, even smaller cities, visual art, performing arts. It's really a great resource to find out about shows in your area. So to start off, I would like you all to both talk about this specific curator-artist relationship. And how it's influenced the direction, Tierra, of your continuing practice, and also Sierra, how it's maybe influenced you and your curatorial practice.
I guess I'll go first with this because you brought up 500X in her first solo show, yeah. And I actually juried the show that she won that solo show for. So it was the Black Voices show that 500X had in 2020. Yes, 2020, yes. I was a jury for that exhibition. I was able to pick a bunch of different artists to put in that show. And I kept coming back to Tierra for the award just because it was the way she was writing about her work on her website and how she was discussing her work, you know, on social media, as well as like on her website. So I was like, what is this? I don't know. But then I saw one of the works in person when it got delivered to the exhibition. And I just was like, it's something there. And it was crazy because I was just like, I'm going to give her a solo show. And everybody's mm-hmm. like, why? And I was like, the work is good. It's going places. It can evolve. And I'm ready to see that. Yeah. And now we're close friends, obviously. But I've seen that happen from solo show number one to where we are today and all the evolving that has happened between, you know, the last 3 years at this point.
Yeah, that's, I don't know, that's like a flashback to the past.
Yeah. A long time ago.
Yeah, it's a long time. But I feel that having Sierra for me was, I guess I could just say a breath of relief, because she's somebody that I really, like, trust and value her opinion, just mm-hmm. having, like, a certain amount of knowledge and just, I guess, expertise, that if I was thinking about a certain idea and I would, like, share it with her because she's trying to see, like, where my mind is at. Mm-hmm. It's, like, the idea of, okay, this is how this could work. This is how this could work. If you really want to do it, we could figure it out. If it's not as important, then we can set it aside for later. So for me, having somebody who has my best interests at heart was really important, and trusting the stuff that I was making very recently that didn't have any eyes on it really, and sharing that with somebody who has seen the evolution of the stuff that I've been making. So she kind of knows where my head is at, mm-hmm. Because she's seen the early stuff up until now. And we had a lot of conversations about art and, like, critiquing our stuff, other people's stuff, so we can kind of know where the other person is at mentally. Mm-hmm. So when she's trying to see what I am aiming to do, she has previous dialogue that can support, I know what you're trying to do, so let's get closer to it by going this way or going this way. Mm-hmm. So for me, it was trust involved of realizing, okay, I think she's trying to get me to be as good as I can, as best as I can be, or... Yeah. And even installing the show, like, she was, like, working. Like, y'all saw, like, she's making sure everything is, like, detailed. I'm like, oh, she really cares about the work looking as good as it can look. Mm-hmm. Like, treating it as if it's her baby, like, she's treating it as her own, which I really appreciated. And also having both of our names attached. Lately, I've been very thoughtful about what do I want my name to be attached to. So I wanted to make sure the work is good because her name attached to it. So I don't want to have something they come in to see it. It's like, okay, Sierra O'Brien, I'm familiar with her. Let's see what she's curating. It's like, what's this? So as much as myself, it's also I wanted to make sure having other people attached to my stuff that we all feel proud of what's being displayed. So
yeah, of course. Hmm. Yeah, of course.
If I should say that bringing back old stuff, we were hanging out a little bit before we started recording, and you said... I got really happy because you said this felt natural being here. And so hearing Sierra talk about kind of the process early on from your first solo show, I like to think that we do pretty cool stuff here at OC3. So y'all hearing the y'all's vision and relationship and how, like, this evolution has made its way to OC3 is just another testament of what I like to believe in the space that we harbor here and kind of support. So,
yeah. And just thinking about, you know, you, Sierra, you know, encountering Tierra's work through during the show at 500X and, you know, establishing that connection with her as another art, a fellow artist and curator being interested in the work. And then from there, developing that closeness, that friendship, I think is a lot of what we do in the arts. You know, we really are about creating community and supporting each other, and I think that's really something very important. And not only do we do cool things here, but as I said the other day in the gallery, we really, really, our intention is to do it out of love.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Love for the arts and love for the artists.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Yeah. Well, I want to start with Tierra making a comment and then going into some questions. Like, when I look at your work, it makes me think about Micheline Thomas and Mark Bradford because of the way that they innovate with materials. And I think it was a talk I was watching. Mark Bradford was like, I like to go to Home Depot to get my materials yeah. and stuff like that. And Micheline Thomas talking about use of glitter and things like that. Yeah, you're really pushing the envelope and innovating. Can you talk a little bit about your use of materials?
The use of materials really came from the act of wanting to stay excited about the things that I was creating, because as a painter primarily, I like using watercolor, acrylic, and like drawing materials, oil pastel, markers. But there's only so much for me that I can stay engaged unless I just really love the subject matter and I just really want to get that on paper or canvas. So when I add like rhinestones or glitter or like pipe cleaners, it becomes more of that crafty, like when you're like a kid and you're in kindergarten, it's like, wow, I get to cut paper into circles and hearts. Like there is like a fun and an aspect of the process. So while I do like the materiality of it, the process also helps keep me present and engaged in what I'm making without critiquing it as it's happening. So that's the issue that I'll have pretty often, where I'm critiquing it as I'm actively painting. It's like, you can't do both at the same time. As you're creating, you have to step back from it to do that. You can't critique it as you're drawing the line, because those two things can't really mix at the same time. So we're using materials I have to glue on, or that I have to sculpt and press inside of another material. I'm interested in those materials interacting at that moment. I'm not thinking about, is this working? Is this ugly? Is this right? You're thinking about the physicality of your fingers. Using your fingers to make art. So that's one of the inspirations behind the recent ones. And also I like how it looks. I think it looks cool. Like I want to make stuff that I would want to go, if I didn't make this, but I still think it's good. Yeah. Which I think as artists, I don't, not to say everybody needs to do this, but for me, that's how I can kind of be more removed from the work. It's like, if I didn't make this, would I still be able to appreciate it? Because when you're making the stuff, I know it took hours to make. I know that I burned my fingers this many times. I know that I had to search for this certain blue, and I had to, I know all the things that went into that. If I didn't know that, will I still be invested in it? So that's another thing that I kind of think about. And for me, having those materials, it's fun. It feels like it freshens up the work and gives it a breath of air. So that's one reason why I do enjoy using materials that maybe you wouldn't normally see in a painting.
I also want to remind you of the word resourcefulness, because some of the times that we talked when you were in school and before you graduated, it was like finding the resources to make the work. So we both have spent a lot of time talking about you using different things and then like incorporating what does the printer paper do versus watercolor versus using ink instead of any kind of like acrylic, and manipulating that and still being accessible to, like, if somebody else saw it, they can also try those things because it is something that is accessible.
That's a good thought. I'm glad you brought that up, because that's another flashback. Like, you know, you did, like, that story is like, that chapter is closed. It's like, no, that still is impacting right now, because I still use, is it the CraftSmart, that liquidy, it's a acrylic paint, but I don't know what type of paint that is. It's like that liquidy, just watery paint.
Mostly yes. Walmart paint.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's like a dollar with the little,
yeah, that 95 cent paint. Yeah.
I was said not to use it by like your teachers, your professors. I was like, don't use this, it's cheap. And I'm like, well, I kind of like that it's liquidy because it does something different than the heavy body acrylic paint.
Yeah.
And when I was using, I was like, well, if I have it listed like on the materials list, that's this CraftSmart, it's like, oh, she can make this cool thing, this thing that looks like, it looks like fine art with this. And it's like that idea of like accessibility, that you can use hair beads and hair bows, and it's like, oh, that's considered fine art too. Yes. It's like, it's about the intention behind it that's pushing it. So I don't want, like, thinking about other young artists that can kind of get cut off by, like, I don't have the money for this, I don't have this. It's like, you can still make something that has that value attached, and we can see the intention behind it,
yeah,
on how you use it. So while we do like good quality materials, that India ink feels different when it costs a little bit more. Yeah, yeah, you can understand, yeah, you can still have that skill seen with something that might not like that accessibility.
It's not the tools and materials that make it good, it's the artist that makes it good.
Right.
So you can use really anything.
Yeah. You should be able to
crayons.
We still like good quality, but you can make some cool stuff with some crayons.
Yes, yeah. You can. I mean, you're using pot cleaners and it's brilliant.
I know.
Yes. So.
And it's fun.
Yes.
I think we have so much serious stuff. It's like, maybe let's take it. Well, you got to take it back to kindergarten. It's like, I need to feel safe again.
But there is a seriousness in your work.
Yeah.
Even though there's that aspect of play and there's the visual play of the material, there is a seriousness to your work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's leading me to quote that you're interested in the moments in between everything else. Mm-hmm. Moments right before a hug or after a hug. Oh, when I read that, I was like, oh. It made me think back in the day, there was this poet, Ha Jin, that back when I worked at the Crow Collection a long time ago, came to Arts and Letters Live at the DMA and talked about it being about the space in between the words. That's what makes the poetry.
Mm-hmm. What's the process?
Yes. Yeah. And so that, well.
An experience, yeah, lived experience, yeah.
Exactly. So it makes me think back a little bit to what you were saying about not critiquing your work as you're making it and about intention. Do you have any type of ritual or a mindset that you get yourself into before you make work, or do you just like get up at a certain time every day and like punch it out like for certain hours?
Having
having
a ritual would be amazing. That happens on a good day where it's like, okay, let's do a little meditation. Wow, maybe I should sketch for about 10 to 20 minutes to get my hand warmed up. It's like all the stuff you know you should do. Right. It happens on a good day where it's like, well, I have vitamins, I had a smoothie, I had a good breakfast, nice and balanced. Like when that stuff happens, it's like, yeah, I have a little ritual. It's like stuff flows easily. When not, just ground pound to the head, to the canvas. That's what's been happening in the past. Probably with making the newer pieces of the show the last month, I'm just like, I need to go to the studio today. I'm waking up, I need to go to the studio today. I was there till 1 a.m. last night. I have to go before work, I have to go after work. Like, it's just, I don't know, I was just having such a panic. And I guess having the work at a space that I know that people can easily go see it, and it's known to have, oh, it has art there at that space. I came here years ago where it was like a group exhibition. And I remember it was Cedric Huckabee's work. He had these big portraits. And I remember coming with my sister. That was the first time I saw his work in person. I was like, wow, this is actually better than the pictures that I see when I was searching it on Google. Mm-hmm. This is really cool. Having that experience and knowing it's like, oh, you're going to have a show there too. But it's just you. It's just you. Yeah. So I was like, okay, it has to be good. I have to, not to say I need to create that same feeling, but in my mind, it's like you have to meet it somewhere. Because if people are going to see it, it's going to be up for about a month. You have to do something. So really just waking up and going to the studio and just trying to put paint or something on a canvas has been lately. A ritual can happen if everything else in life is like, oh, I'm balanced, I'm meditating, I need to walk in a park. That's happened when that happened. But if not, it's like, okay, you got a deadline, you got to get it done. So just at the most or at the least, it's like, just try. So that's in my head. It's like, just try to do something. Even if you just add in paint, just add more paint. Just these rhinestones you think about, just add it. Just make some type of decision so you have something to respond to.
Yeah. Get out of your own head and just go for it. Yeah.
Well, and I have something for Sierra too. Well, I remember before I started here, I ran into the two of you at Oil and Cotton, and we got to talking and everything, and you were such an advocate for Tierra. And Tierra's not the only one that you've been an advocate for. Yeah. You have been an advocate for myself, many artists I can think of. Do you think of your curatorial practice as like an extension of social practice artwork as well?
Yes, absolutely. Mm-hmm. I remember when I had my first solo show at another cultural center. And the opportunity was given to me just because of a professor that told me to go talk to somebody. And that extension was like, you know, Harold was like, can you install in 2 weeks? And I was like, absolutely. But it was just like, because I knew somebody that believed in me and was able to tell me to go talk to somebody else, it happened. And I think about that a lot, because if I didn't go, where would I have been? But where also, if Harold wasn't that genuine of a person to support the artist, it wouldn't have happened anyway. So I always think about that, and I always try to create space for other people. No matter what I'm doing, I will refer, you know, you need somebody to hang a portrait, I got somebody for you. You need somebody to weld something together, I know somebody that could do that too. You need somebody to cook, I know, for a dinner party, I know a person. So I'm always trying to blend people together, but also give everybody, you know, their moment to have, to get their bag, to experience new things, because we're supposed to share it in community. And I also always want to be an advocate for doing that.
Yeah. I'm glad you brought that up, Andrea, about the social practice component. Cause, yeah. I feel like I run into you in places.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And it's always, outside.
Yeah, no, and it is cool to see that, because, in reality, you know, our world is a small one,
mm-hmm.
and it's even that much smaller when you talk about the advocates and the true supporters of what it is that we really do. So when you say names like Harold, like, yeah. I'm just overjoyed, because I'm like, yeah, we all sort of have our experiences with, you know, certain people that have either connected us or were able to provide that mm-hmm. platform or support us in any way. And to be able to know that you have these people that you can rely on. And it's like, even if it's not something that I'm qualified for or have advice yeah. on, I know that I can turn to someone and we'll figure it out as a community.
Yes.
And there's not a whole lot of people like that. So
yeah.
We appreciate you.
I try. I always try to remember that I might know something that somebody else doesn't know, mm-hmm. and they don't know that I know it until they know that I know it.
Yeah.
So I have to continuously be in dialogue and let people like, ask questions, but also, like, if I don't have the answers, point them to the person that right. does have the answer. Right.
So I want to talk about Sierra, go back to the curatorial practice, since we just I want to lead off of that. So earlier Tierra and I were talking in the gallery and talking about engaging with art, and you know, I was sort of reminiscing and talking about like when I do a studio visit. As a fellow curator and artist, when I do a studio visit with an artist, or even just go see an exhibition that I'm really excited about, when that happens, it's not just this act of like advocating for another artist or creating community. It fulfills me as a visual artist in ways that I can't really like put a lot of words to, but I'll go to a studio visit and I'm like, oh my God, I want to get back in my studio. Yeah. And it's not like a, damn it, why am I not making art? It's a, oh, I'm so inspired by what this artist is doing. Yeah. I want to go into my studio and, you know, to quote, you know, some of Tierra's words about her work, realize myself, mm-hmm. find myself again in that work. And I've been talking about a little bit to other people lately about what it is like to make art as an artist, and that you really are, so much of it is making art so that you can know yourself and know your experience, and not to analyze it, but just to like be connected to it. So my question is, sorry, how does, curating and being amongst artists fulfill you as an artist?
It's like, it's like, being able to talk in gibberish to another person and they know exactly what you're talking
yeah,
about.
Yeah.
I had I went to go see one of my mentors slash friends slash like favorite person's closing reception on Saturday, Melanie and Zach. They had a great show at Lily on the Block, and it's talking about AI, and we were able to talk to each other about doing video and multimedia work very specifically. But like, if somebody walks into that conversation, they'll be like, what are y'all talking about? And I'm like using words like surrealism and camp and like cute as like a cultivator. And anybody else would have been like, I don't know what y'all are talking about. But yeah, an artist would know exactly what I'm talking about. But it's great because it is one of those things that we should be feeding off of each other to an extent. I mean, not leeching off of each other, but like feeding each other to continue to make and to continue to push ourselves. And I think my last, I've been doing this for how long? 12 years.
Don't count the years.
10, 12, something. It's up there now. I've been trying to always have those working relationships that also help me make. Like I think about, you know, Ari Brielle being one of my close friends, and we go back and forth about work, but then we also just contextualize other things and talk about the books and talk about, you know, the movies and how that informs where we are and what we're thinking. But like, it's great to have that dialogue with a group of people. Other people just look at me like I'm crazy when I'm like, Afro surrealism and futurism, and they're like, what are you talking about? And I'm like, never mind. Never mind.
Well, thank you. I feel the same. Tiara, I wanted to also talk about, you know, we were talking about material earlier, and Andrea asked this wonderful question about, like, your exploration of materials and, you know, how that feels to you. And I wanted to talk about some of the elements that you have in a few of the paintings that I noticed that I'm really intrigued by. And there's something that I'm really drawn to. And I don't want to put any kind of my interpretation on it. I really want to hear you, because this is like a platform for you as the artist, and Sierra as a curator, to talk about the work. But there are a few like objects that you've given human qualities to, like little eyes or well, I guess wings aren't human, but you know, they're sort of like related to humans, this kind of like ethereal version. But can you talk a little bit about, because those appear in a few of the paintings, and they're both playful and cute, but at the same time, there's something that's like a little, like not awkward, but a little, like, you know, okay, there's these objects and they have eyes. So it's a little like off-putting in a manner that makes you like, are they sinister? Are they good? Are they protecting? Are they something else?
The objects with the eyes, and it's like little angel wings.
Okay.
Because a good amount of the show has those themes of like spirituality. For me, thinking about things that help you like be healthy and help you feel better, like just like in a body sense of like water, like you should probably drink water every day, probably a few bottles. Maybe like a plant is helping you get out of bed. It's like, oh, I haven't watered my plant in a week. I should probably get up and do that. Like things that help. So if you see like some of the, even the text, it's like it has like God, or you see the prayer hands. It's like, what, for me, what God is, it's like leading me back to myself in the healthiest way possible. So even the idea of like guardian angels being these objects around that is like, maybe your yoga mat, that's calling you for a reason. Like if you stretch, you might feel better.
Yeah.
If you eat a little bit of fruit, you might feel better. So for me, those are the objects. And if you see that on your desk, you see a mug, you see a water bottle, it's like, it's just sitting there as a stagnant object. But like, you know, when your heart is like, I need that to feel better, whether I want to do it or not, it's different. But even if you see on some of the like little eyes, they kind of, they look a little bit worried.
Yeah.
Because it's like, I'm right here offering myself to her, but she's not picking it up right now.
Like, it's
she's,
like, you're ignoring a you're sign. Ignoring,
but it's like, you don't, like, you're ignoring the sign. I'm right in front of you offering myself, but you aren't concerned with this right now. So the only thing I can do, and that's to like a human in real life, that you see somebody that needs help.
Yeah.
You can only offer as much as they're willing to take or they're willing to see. So that's kind of a similar idea with those little images in the thing. Because in one, like, she's interacting with it, she's picking it up, and then it's the singing mode, she's playing it. It's like, okay, now I'm consciously making a choice to let you help me. Mm-hmm. And previous is like, okay, I don't want help right now. I just want to just feel this emotion. Whether I want to feel it or not, I just have to sit in it. And then it's like, okay, let me choose to interact with this thing that's trying to acknowledge me and help me. So. Mm-hmm.
Thank you for that.
Thank you for asking that
question. When you were talking about it, I was like, oh, yes, of course.
I'm glad you brought it up.
Yeah, because I think they're important elements in the paintings. And you know, you were talking about, you know, God and spirituality, and that sort of leading you and taking care of yourself and learning about yourself. Could you talk a little bit about how your relationship to spirituality, you know, in whatever way you're connected to it, influences your work and influences like you as an artist?
So I have a lot. I told y'all this earlier when I was thinking of, cause I think you had brought up some of the texts on a wall and I was like, I think I have it's a central crisis like every day. I don't know. It's pretty constant.
Yeah.
Cause I like to think about like what I like to analyze things. So when I was talking about my work earlier, how I'm critiquing it as I'm making it, it's like, okay, pause. Yeah. I have a lot of thoughts that are constantly overlapping.
Yes.
So when I think about movies or TV shows or songs or anything, it's like, what does this mean? I always want to attach meaning to something. And I feel that like making art is like, am I supposed to be an artist? Like, if you think about destiny, am I destined to be an artist? Is this what I'm supposed to do? Or am I just making
you are.
Yeah.
So well, thinking about that.
Whether you're destined to be or not, you are.
You
so
are.
So it's like, is it a decision that I'm consciously making? Because sometimes it's very hard to make that decision. So it's like, am I making this decision of my own motive? Or do I have this talent to turn into a skill for a certain reason? So at that point it's like, okay, I'm gonna have to pick and choose if it's a destiny and I'm destined to do this, or is this a decision I'm making? Just choose one. So then it's not going to change the outcome, but it's going to change how I look at it. So with the idea of like God or spirituality, we don't know if it exists or not for sure, but that's not going to change whether it does or not. You just have to choose for yourself. Do I believe all these things adding up? Wow, these are all signs that are pointing me to the right direction. Or the wind is just blowing a certain way that day. You're not going to know, but you can know what you decide to believe it to be.
Yes.
So for me, I like to think meeting Sierra and submitting to that show and then getting the solo show and then having people support. It's like, wow, I'm on the right path. People just came. They just thought it was cool. You never know what the actual thing is. Mm-hmm. So for me, choosing to think that God is like, that's the spirit of love. Love wants to express itself in endless amount of ways. You can do that by, I'm going to buy this coffee for the person behind me. They look a little sad today. I'm going to treat them. You don't know that person, but you don't know how that spread to their life. It's like, wow, this person was looking out for me. They don't even know me. And now they want to go home. I'm going to talk to my mom and tell her that I'm so sorry for disrespecting her when I was a teenager. Like, you never know how things, like the butterflies, you never know how things inspire
all the parents
others.
In the room. Yes. It'll happen one day.
Yeah. So I think with that, deciding what like God is for me or what belief is for me and my personal lived experience and sharing that through the art is like, I feel like that was important to add just because I think about it so much and it was influencing the work through like the little angel objects or the prayer hands. It's like, what is helping me do better the next day? If I pray and think, okay, something is looking out for me. I don't know exactly what it is. I can't picture it, but I think after praying that hopefully something will fall into place tomorrow. And then when it falls into place, maybe it's because I relaxed about it and wasn't panicking and sending emails like, oh, I'm so sorry. It's like they decided to respond when it was the right time. So yeah. I think for me, it helps that, basically.
Yeah.
Ooh. I'm an OG old school hip hop head. And from what you're talking about now and the initial glimpse I had of your work, like it's reminiscent of this group Organized Confusion, and there's Prince Poe and Pharamond. And so it's like, for the listeners, I'm not saying that it's confusing. I'm saying that there's so many different things out in the world and you're tying them together in a way where like, it's provoking a lot of introspection specifically right now. So my hope is that really that people that come to see the exhibition get a chance to listen to the podcast, to hear you talk about that, because it makes so much sense. Like even from the short experience that I had and small conversations that we've had, but in my own world, piecing it together with what you're saying is behind everything and your process. Yeah, it's like it's some self-reflecting going on right now, and I know I'm not so happy to hear that.
Yeah, it should be it should do that. It absolutely should do that. And I think even us choosing the title, which was funny because we were going back and forth and I just stopped her immediately and I was like, learning to be tough. And she just sat there and she was like, yep, you're right. And it is this learning and reflecting moment and observing and tying all these pieces together to get to Tierra, but like also yourself. Like we've talked about spirit a lot. We've had great nights talking about spirit and like going on journeys and experiencing what was happening in our life at the time. And then I'm still being able to see certain things and be like, okay, I should have this reaction or I shouldn't have this reaction or it is a sign or it isn't a sign, or, you know, there's some protection involved and like, you know, love being there, and it should do that. Everything in that room should do that.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, doing it.
I'm glad that you said that.
Yeah.
Because a lot of times I do feel like I'm speaking like gibberish. So it's like, okay.
No.
So it's good that it is connecting, because I do want people to feel that like either reflection or like the work feels very, to me, very vulnerable, because it is like scanned journal entries, or even like notes being printed out. And for me, that feels vulnerable because I wrote this. I was in a crazy headspace. I don't know. So to have it printed out and then people could choose to read it, they could disregard it, which is another thing. It's like, oh, you don't want to read the stuff that came out of my heart. It's like, so it's like that, as the artist putting it out. So if somebody can absorb it, and it's like, well, would I do this? It's like, I don't think I would, but this is the reason. I don't want to share that about me. I don't want people to judge. So it's like, it might send you on a spiral of thoughts about yourself and what you would do, or appreciating somebody else has done that as well. So
well, that's brave. I mean, we kind of like, as a community, we charge our artists to do that for us. We ask you to be vulnerable because we need the inspiration to find the courage to say, yo, I connect with this, and you know, this moves me to think about something in a different light or a shared perspective that, you know, you might help someone get through something that you will never meet, right? And that's a responsibility that we unknowingly sometimes charge our artists with. So when we get to experience and present things like this, I mean, I don't think that there's a way to really repay the kind of debt, because there's no way of measuring how far those ripples will go, right? But we're watching we see.
Yeah.
Well, and I think it was just you and I, Sierra, that were talking about this a little bit, that I am reading the book Real to Real, Race, Sex, and Class at the Movies, and how it's really changed my relationship with the idea of critique.
Yes.
And both of you have said the word critique or criticism a few times during this conversation. And then two, just listening to the two of you talk about how you move work forward with critique and how loving and constructive it's been in the process of you working together is really, really wonderful to hear. Can y'all talk a little bit about critique and criticism in visual art and the importance of it in the art ecosystem?
Go first. Well, I was gonna actually say you wanna go first. But so TT's a chatter. So TT will hop on live, hop on the YouTube, vlog about it and tell you like, oh my God, this is what's going on. This is what I'm seeing, this is what I'm experiencing. And it's interesting because she's having this dialogue. It kind of feels like she's having it with herself, but she's not. She's having it with all of us. And we talk a lot about work and looking at work and experiencing work. And a lot of us aren't really critiquing it. And I grew up with full-blown, you have critique in school, it looks like this, you get the feedback, you either adjust it or you don't, and you defend that why you do or you don't. And then you move forward, or you hear something once and it comes back to you 5, 4, 6, 8, 10 years later. And then you make, you know, that adjustment in your work. And Dallas isn't doing that right now. There's a lot of works that are happening and experiences that are happening that are not getting actual criticism. And it's just, it's up there. But me and Tierra and some of our other friends, love to have moments where we're actually critiquing work because it just it invites us to talk about it critically and actually pull in from what we are experts in and share that with each other, but also like it forces us to do better when we are making and when we are advocating for ourselves as well. Go ahead, Miss Chatty.
Critique. I actually love critique. Critique might not be the best word.
I think it's a terrible word.
I have my own feelings about that word. I'll say critique feels very, it feels very harsh. And when I think about critique, because when we were doing critique in school, a lot of people wouldn't always comment about my stuff. And I'm just like, is it not good? Is it not, like, what is it? But I think sometimes people didn't know how to talk about it. And yeah, because maybe the subject matter and they couldn't relate to it maybe. And they're like, that's fine, but there's also paint on the canvas. There's also marks. Like you could choose something to talk about, which I think when I think about critique, I'm wanting to know what was the person's intention and how close did they get to that. And also, I guess a big thing for me is like sincerity and that genuine aspect is like, did you really put your all into making this? Or if you're resting on a name, it's like, that's fine, just be honest about it. It's like, I have a name, I know somebody's gonna buy it, that's fine. It's like, okay. But it's like, then you don't care about critique because you have your reason for making it. You're not necessarily wanting it to be a certain thing. But I think when somebody is like, for me, I critique my own work, or I look at it and it's like, what is missing here? What needs to be added? Like, I don't just like to put something up and it feels unfinished. I think my granny, she was like, how would they know it's unfinished? You only one that's gonna know. I was like, yeah, and I'm not gonna like that because I'm gonna put it up and know I wanted to add more on that part. So for me, it's like, are you putting your best foot forward? And if you feel like you are, but it's not connecting, how can we help you get there? I feel like critiquing with love and honesty is the best way to go about it because you want that person to, you want them to make the work that they want to make, which is some good stuff that people feel engaged with. And if they're not making, it's like, well, you're not connecting because of this. This is a distraction or this is standing in the way. So I appreciate critique for us all to make really good, interesting, engaging work. But everybody might not feel that way, which is fine. Everybody got their own opinion. But that's why I like it.
Well, that's why it's important. Like, when, you know, in Sierra, you're talking about the defending part, you know, because everybody makes choices, right? And so with the understanding of going through the criticism and being able to filter perspectives based on others' experiences, and then at the end being able to go back and say, well, this is why that choice was made.
Yeah, it's I think about critique in general, like the communication model of like you hear a message, you receive the message, you transmit the message, and you respond. Mm-hmm. And that is exactly what critique is based off of, essentially, is like receiving something and responding. But a lot of people don't know how to sit there and deal with it and then come up with what's next, whether it be to say something about it, to make the change, or to like scrap it all together. But that has a lot to do with like self-reflection in the work as well. And I think people are having a hard time handling that. So a lot of people don't like the feedback or won't accept it to be genuine and coming from a nice place. They'll be like, oh, you're just telling me this because you're mad or you're upset.
Oh, you're a hater.
You're a hater. You a hater. Yeah.
Well, it definitely has to be constructive. And the problem with critiques in school is that when you're with a group of fellow artists, you look at the work for, I don't know, 15, 20 minutes.
Yep.
And then you're asked to respond to it. And my feeling is that the work needs to be experienced for longer for you to really, even if the artist stands up and says, you know, this is my concept, this is, you know, the things I'm thinking about in my work. But as you said, there are materials. You could talk about the materials. Even if you don't like see something in it that you can connect to. And then there's always the option to ask questions.
Yeah.
Just ask some questions, you know? So yeah, critiques are really interesting. It can be like harsh and, but I mean, also I'll say, you know, that if you critique with really people that you trust and it's in a safe space or really close artist friends, or even someone who's not an artist who has followed your work for a while, that's the best. I try not to listen to those. I mean, I'm not saying like they're haters, but you know, you do have to filter. You have to filter everything.
Well, and a little bit of what I'm hearing that is just in the structure of things is a lot of the education comes from examples of work that are white supremacist, patriarchal, capitalistic. And so there's not the educational support to have large swaths of the population be able to look at different works and be able to critique it from different mindsets or perspectives, or have their own thoughts about it outside of those power structures, sadly. That gets in the way a lot of it.
And we're really missing a lot of critical writing on the arts in Dallas-Fort Worth, and really in the nation as a whole.
Yes.
I feel like we're missing a lot of critical writing. And I know I'm missing a lot. I know there's people out there writing, but I think there needs to be more.
Not consistently.
Right.
So let's talk about the lived experience. We've mentioned that a couple of times, and there's, you know, definitely the narrative of the self in this exhibition, Learning to Be Tough. I mean, tough, Tierra, unique, Francois, right? T-U-F. Like, that really lined up.
Yeah, we didn't even talk about it, but you want to talk about that real quick? Your name?
That really lined up. Okay, my mom gave me that name, obviously, when I was born. And I remember when I got older, she was like, yeah, if you ever get famous, ever, I don't want you to change your name. It's because you already got one. You already got a famous name. I was like, okay. Like, so even, like, choosing to go by the full name, because I feel like it's very, very specific. Like, Tierra, that's going to be a name that black girls in the 90s, you could kind of very much directly place who has that name. It's only a certain demographic. Black American girls who was probably born 1999 and 1990, that's probably who's going to have that name. And then unique, only a black person about to name their child unique. And then Francois, like, that has to be, like, that's
unique, just, girl.
So only a black mom about to name a child that. Yes. And then Francois, that came from my dad. He's from Louisiana. So that already has a certain type of weight to it. Yeah. Everybody, are you French? It's like, baby, my daddy from Louisiana. They just, they had some other stuff going on down there.
You know, as we like to call it, slave names.
Yeah, yes. Slavery. Yeah, let's put yeah. it out there.
Yeah.
Happy Black History Month.
Yeah.
So, like, even that having, like, a certain weight and, like, choosing to, like, carry that family name, but then also the idea of, like, learning to be self, which is learning to be those initials, and then the word tough. So, like, the show has a lot of the lived experience, a lot of, even one of the pieces have like hopeless in the like text of it, so it's like a lot of it has like a somber like sadness to it. So like learning through these experiences how to be not only yourself but like have a thicker skin or to go through the trials and tribulations of life and come out better for it, I guess. So that's kind of like the idea.
And you're in a couple of the paintings, there's like a painting with you and your dad. There's a painting with you and your mom, correct? I mean, actually, there's two paintings of you and your dad, right? Yeah.
Well, pops.
So there's that family, and I think you use the word lineage narrative in there as well. Could you talk about your choice to include? I mean, this is like learning to be, you know, tough. So talk about wanting to include that lineage, that family.
I think for me, when I painted those particular pieces, it came from a place of I was looking at the image of the like picture and I was like, this is such like we're having a photo shoot in the backyard on my parents' first child. They were like 19 when they had me and we were in swimsuits in the backyard, no pool, no water, but the chair from the kitchen. And, like, taking pictures, the sun was, like, shining beautifully through the leaves. There was, like, a porta potty in the back. So it's, like, all these images making a genuine, like, family love. But something that I feel like it's not really, that's not really displayed anywhere besides in your family pictures.
Yeah.
Because we have things tidied up. So with those pieces, I wanted to include them as far as, like the idea of like the beginning of like just me being here and like showing like maybe I did come from a place of love. That don't mean that I'm not having a hard time mentally with different stuff happening. So it's kind of like making that connection, because if you have a lot of tragedy, it's like, of course I'm gonna be sad, but it's like, I didn't have tragedy in this very specific type of way, but it's still, I still had to learn how to reconnect to myself through different things happening, even though I started from this place of love and care and sheltering and protection. So I think adding those in helped to make a give context.
I don't think I've sent this to you, but there's a essay by Bell Hooks in Picturing Us, and there's a part of it that she talks about the home and photographs being a Black person's first version of a museum. And having that experience of like seeing yourself. So like family portraits are a huge thing for communities of color, because that's the only kind of trinkets we can have in a sense of like fleeing and moving and migrating, that it's something that's tangible that you can keep. But it's interesting that we always kind of come back to those like small little family portraits to inform like this movement within ourselves to who we become. But like it's me being a photographer and using photographs in that way already, and you referencing it is so interesting to see that we're always going back to the same part that is like embedded in us, and it started in the home. Why are you like?
Yeah, I'm just letting that sentence rest.
Yeah.
Some space.
Space. Yes. Pause. A pause.
Yeah, lots of head nodding. Everyone's like, yes. So good. I'm letting that still have its space. I mean, I'm really in awe of this body of work, and in your work in particular. There's just so much depth there, not only in the content of the work, but in the way that you've built the object. You know, you've got, you know, this piece where you just use like the outer frame, and there's a a figure that's, I think, you as a child, like kind of attached and hovering in that frame. And then some other work that I've seen, some past work that I've seen on your website where you've turned the frame around. And I think it was like a portrait series, and it was like kind of poking at Olin Mills. Yeah. And it was like you turned around that canvas and you used the crossbars of the canvas to be like the separators for the Olin Mills paintings or reference paintings that you did. And then you've got these beautiful, if y'all haven't already seen this, y'all need to come see it. you've got these really beautiful sculptural forms around some of the paintings that, you know, they're both part of the work and separate at the same time in terms of like just a dialogue about art. And I really feel like, you know, even though like the heart where we were talking about like how you built that up and what material you used and, you know, thinking about like, you know, how long is it going to take for this to dry? And like you're really thinking about sculpture in that way, you know? So I really appreciate the work that you've put into this body. And I'm in awe of the detail that you've put into it. And I know you said you were like earlier, you said, oh, it's kind of frantic. I want to make this good, you know, and make Sierra feel good about it and yourself feel good about it and not put anything out there that you weren't satisfied with. But, I mean, again, like top five, Glass Tire. And y'all don't just look at that one photo of that artwork.
No, need to that's come not see. It.
That's not it. It gets, it increases from there in the beauty and the interest of the materials and the content that's there. I'm a cheerleader.
Thank you so much.
Yeah.
I have to listen to this podcast on a bad day.
Yeah.
Like, I did that.
And I feel like, you know, we're doing this podcast, y'all, and the work just went up. So I do feel like we would all have a lot more to say and about the work. But again, I think people need to sit with work for longer. Mm-hmm. Are there things that you want to talk about regarding this exhibition that you want to tell people that just maybe are going to listen to the podcast and learn more about you, or that, you know, hopefully y'all will come see the show?
I just want people to feel the emotion behind it, but also I guess I'm thinking about when we were talking about critique earlier. And something that I was thinking to say was the idea of when somebody is critiquing or analyzing or even offering thoughts about the work, either to the artist, to friends, even writing it to themselves. Sometimes things stick out to you that the artist had intention for. And I think when we notice the small details, it matters, because the artist, when they're, like I said, when you're painstakingly gluing little rhinestones and glue, like glitter, all of those are conscious decisions that you're physically making. So when you could just look at a work like, oh, that's nice, and like move on, it's like, well, every part of this was made, like handcrafted. So when you can notice that and appreciate it, I think that's really important, to let the work breathe and have air around it. And the thoughts that you have about are valid. So like, let yourself go down the rabbit hole of those thoughts. Like, oh, she chose to put this here. No, she didn't. That was just a happy accident. It's like, no, some of that stuff, that's not happy accidents.
Yep.
And if it is, like, the decision to keep it there and not cover it up is also valid. So thinking about the choices that went into making the work and offering it to be viewed by somebody that I don't know who's going to look at it. I just want people to give it time to like sit with it and understand that all of that was a conscious decision made. Mm-hmm. So
I'm lucky that I work here, because I can, you know, walk in there. But all the things that were talked about today, love, trust, the intention. I mean, when Iris was talking about the piece here, and you managed to put so much life into all of the work. And I remember when I walked by that piece specifically and just thinking, like, even the life of the frame itself, and like feeling like sometimes I need some D-rings to hold me up, you know? And so it's really cool to be able to kind of have that look, but also have it sit with you enough to say, man, you know, I got to get through this email, or a week later, like, yeah, I'm not feeling too great. I need those D-rings. I need those D-rings. But yeah, it's I'm lucky again that I get to be here and come to work and be able to go and look at it. So I implore our listeners to get in here as soon as they can and come back.
Also, the words, read the words. Read the words. Read the text.
Yeah,
read
this was me as a curator pushing her to explore some of the text that she was saving and recording as a part of the work. So most of it's my fault because I'm just like, more, more words. And it's a lot to read, but you should read it all. And you should engage with most of it. But yeah.
Yeah, I think the addition of the scanned images and the also like the printed text is, I think, gives, and I haven't read all of it, but I was reading like bits and pieces as I was in there with y'all earlier, and I remember I really related to, like, you know, not wanting, where you mentioned like not wanting to be old before you start enjoying life. Yeah, I'm there right now. Yes. I'm still in it. I'm like, how do I enjoy this? I'm old. I don't know. You figure it out. Please let me know. Yeah. Maybe I need to get more spiritual because I'm not. Gosh. I'm a terrible atheist. But, you know, I think it's really a powerful, and as you said, powerful and vulnerable. Because it gives the viewer, you're giving the viewer, I don't want to say what, like too much, but I mean, in some ways I'm like, they don't deserve that. But you're giving the viewer so much of yourself.
And I think me and Sierra, because she was asking me questions before he came in here, and like a little, I don't know, a little prep. I was like, okay, I'm ready.
Pre-interview.
I do like my kids sometimes, my students.
I'm a true teacher.
I'm just like, well, even me making you do a timed writing for the letter. Mm-hmm. So there's a letter to baby Tierra.
Yes.
And I made her rewrite it twice. Well, I timed her for the first one, and then I was like, you can rewrite it, and she rewrote it. And even that is just like, I'm constantly kind of like, what's next? Like, let's feed it and see where it goes. But it's like making bread. You gotta make the yeast rise. Like, you know, you gotta keep doing the thing.
Well, it's a different, like, like we can talk and we can communicate things, and that's one thing, right? But like, even I know for myself, a lot of the times Iris makes fun of me because I have this big ass calendar here. But if I, you know what I mean?
You gotta see right. it.
And when I write it, I'm like, oh, it's real. You know what I mean? And so text, to a degree, makes certain messages real.
Yeah.
Because it's like, I could have all these thoughts in my head.
Yeah.
But if it's something that I've never spoken or I've never written or I've never read, it might not exist at all, except for in my head. And so I do think the added layer kind of, you know, makes this multifaceted reality of an individual's life like tangible in our gallery space.
Mm-hmm. And I think it gives it that physicality as it exists. And like, that physical, how you was kind of saying, like the thoughts could kind of swirl in your head. And that's the reason I journal so much, is because those thoughts kind of cycle and they feed themselves when you kind of just get stuck in this loop.
Yeah, that's how it looks in my head.
So when you put it out somewhere, it can kind of rest there for, even if it's just a second. With the text, we were thinking about, because Sierra was, got all of it printed. She was like, let's zoom in, let's zoom out, let's adjust, like, let's edit it as far as, like, the color and saturation, texture. And there was some type of hesitation with Tex being in the show, because it was in the frames. It was like in a physical work. But I was like, do I want to scan the journal entries? Do I want to, like, every step I'm like, do I really want to have this out? Which pages can I, like, print and I'm okay with people, like, reading it? Mm-hmm. And I think for me, it was, again, like, that idea of trust, of trusting the viewer to feel that the words are valuable enough to read, mm-hmm. and that they were impactful enough to, like, sit with. I really wanted to provide further context for the show, right, to exist in. Thinking about how gallery spaces are normally like these white rooms, and then you just put the work up, and it's almost wanting it to exist in a vacuum, but nothing exists in a vacuum. It's very sterile.
Yeah, that's why our walls are pale gray.
Shout out to the walls.
Shout out to the walls. So I think that the text and even the sharing of just like having it very open, trusting a viewer to read at least some of it and understand that it's providing context and information for the images.
Yeah. And I will say, having seen the exhibition, even if it was just for, you know, brief moments, it's not too much. Y'all can read this. It's not a lot.
Yeah, it's not.
Yeah. Take your time. Yeah. You need to take your time when you look at art. I have to even remind myself that, mm-hmm. too. Yes.
That's true. Well, is this the time to ask about how do people find you? Or
yes.
If someone's like, I need an answer to this question immediately.
Right now.
Yes. Or can you curate my show, Sierra?
Sure, let's talk about it. Let's have a discussion. Let's have a journal prompt first.
Let's have a critique first.
Absolutely. Y'all can hit me up. I am on the Instagrams. It is my full name. Everything is my full name, just like Tierra. So Sierra L. Bryant on Instagram, my website, Gmail, send me an email. There's options on, like, even my website to just send me a message, and I usually get back pretty quickly. And, like, it's a community. Most people have my number, so y'all could call. Y'all could call and text me.
My Instagram, website, and Gmail is Tierra Unique Francois, with the appropriate ending on it. So it's TierraUniqueFrancois@gmail.com or .com. And I'm open for questions.
Yes.
She's also open for shows.
And commissions. Yes.
More commissions.
Workshops.
Yeah. Come see the show and buy some art.
Yeah.
Thank you for listening.
Yes, indeed. Well, a big thank you to Sierra and Tierra for joining us today. A quick reminder that the exhibition, Learning to Be Tough, is here at the Cultural Center through March 29th, so make sure you stop by and catch it before it's gone. You've been listening to OC3 Frequencies, a podcast by the Oak Cliff Cultural Center. We are a division of the City of Dallas Office of Arts and Culture. You can listen to us on SoundCloud, Spotify, and Apple Podcasts. Make sure you leave us a rating and review. And if you have any feedback for us, please send it our way via Instagram or website at occ.dallasculture.org. Thank you so much for listening. We hope to see you here in Oak Cliff soon, and we'll catch you on the next one. Bye, y'all.
Bye. Bye.